This podcast covers all things health, your body, your brain, and your well-being. Each week, we'll be joined by doctors, as well as the occasional guest, to talk about the health topics that mean the most to you.
Obstacles to cure. Now, I don't particularly like the term cure because you don't cure autoimmunities. People who are in post-traumatic stress, so you don't necessarily get them 100% out of it, but you can improve them enough most of the time to where that person normal life. And so I don't like the term cure, but obstacles to cure, you'll get it as I go through this. And obstacles to cure are the things that you may not think about or the doctor may not think about when they're working with a patient and they haven't looked for those obstacles to cure. They may not realize that's what's sabotaging their small intestinal bacterial overgrowth approach or their functional medicine approach to polycystic ovarians or whatever it is, because there are certain basics. So the book was called Back to Basics. It was written a long time ago, but the reality is I just looked at a case yesterday. It's a polycystic ovarian syndrome case. The case has been sitting there for a couple of years. I got the opportunity to look at it. It was clear that two major basics were skipped on this case, and we went back to apply the first basics, and 4 days later, this patient came to me and said, I've had my first period in 2 years. Didn't know I had it. Walked in the ladies' room. It was there. It wasn't painful. It's there. And she had already been through functional medicine procedures without having had a change because that practitioner skipped the basic, for lack of a better term. So we're going to start with that today. In my world, the basics are handled in a consultation. I do consultations. I think functional medicine practitioners who don't do consultations and take every patient that walks in the door probably may be doing patients a disservice, because there are some patients who just aren't going to work, and you're going to find out who some of them are right now. Some of the time, it's because those patients have conditions that have gone too far. They're taking too many medications. I mean, I've had people come in here taking 20 meds. We'll talk about medications when we walk through the history and how those play into functional medicine being successful or unsuccessful and where that line is drawn. And so basically, there are a lot of things that will stop a person from getting well, though, other than their poor physical condition or their physical condition that maybe is beyond the help of natural remedies being able to recruit their physiology and get better. So this is the very first part of what we're going to call the therapeutic order. As we walk through this, I always tell my patients, functional medicine should be a very orderly procedure. Okay, it shouldn't. When you start feeling like you're going, somebody says they're practicing functional medicine, and they feel like they're like throwing spitballs at the wall, or they came back from a seminar this weekend and they're going to try this on you this weekend. That's not a good sign, okay? Because that shouldn't be the way that it is. So, the therapeutic order starts with removing obstacles to care. Now, some of them are going to be actual physiological obstacles, and I'm going to start with those. And other are going to be obstacles that you might not have thought of. Some might insult some of you, but I'm just going to tell you that I've been doing this a long time. We get pretty consistently successful results, but we do screen our patients. When I say our results are consistently excellent and we have a high success rate, it is because we screen out these obstacles to cure. And I don't turn people away, but if these obstacles to cure are there, I definitely let them know that they're there and this is why they might fail. And if they decide to do the program, that's fine. But if they fail, this is gonna be why you fail, and then it's up to them whether they wanna do the program or not. So I'm not heartless, but I do let them know ahead of time that they need to change. So here's some obstacles to cure. I'll start off with things you might be more familiar with. Like those of you who are in the alternative world, a lot of you are in the alternative world because doctors watch this, but also are well-versed in the alternative world. We're gonna talk about that in a minute online. One is, I'll start off with something kind of pretty obvious that a lot of people know, but maybe not so obvious, like dental. A lot of times when you go into a functional medicine practitioner's office, we don't always have a good relationship with dentists, or we don't always have a dentist that's in our office or those types of things. I myself, for those of you who don't know, I have a lot of this. I have fibromyalgia, peripheral neuropathy, chronic celiac, And I can go on and on, 11 concussions. So you can look at all the other stuff that we've done, and I talk about that. But I've been through this. And I've had infections in your mouth that are undetected. They can really, really sabotage a case. So if you're looking on, if you're online and you're looking online and you're taking this supplement for that and that supplement for this and you're this diet and all, and it's not getting better, a lot of things I'm going to talk about today are going to be the reason. One of the biggest things is dental infections. I had it myself, like everything else, and it took us a while to get rid of it because I didn't want to get my tooth extracted. Because I have a lot of autoimmunity, a tooth extraction can set off autoimmunity. I didn't feel like setting things off because I was in pretty good shape at that time. Once I got the infection under control, it helped my pain to go away. So knowing about dental issues, we're going to talk about the metal aspect of dental issues in a future segment. Heavy metals is a very controversial thing. I think we have a very unique take on it that is correct because of what we've seen. Not all people have to have the mercury, but dental infection can be a real bugaboo. So we have everybody fill out, you know, part of our history is what's going on with your dental stuff. If those people have that, we are going to insist that they go to their dentist either while we're doing this or before we start if it looks like they have dental infections. Another huge one. This is so big, I can't even tell you. It is called sleep apnea. So for those of you who just rolled your eyes, stop, okay? Because we're going to, a lot of these things are gonna cross as we talk over the period of this year. We're gonna talk about basics of physiology that need to be established for you to get well. We're gonna talk about oxygen. We're gonna talk about blood sugar. We're gonna talk about essential fatty acids. We're gonna talk about them extensively in a separate series talk. So basically sleep apnea is enormous. If you have, so you need oxygen, blood sugar, and proper essential fatty acids as core base of being a human being. I mean, if you don't have those things and a few other things, you've kind of left nature. And I'm not, and again, I'll get into it more thoroughly in another presentation, but oxygen is oxygen. If you have cold hands, you have cold feet, you have a cold nose, if you if your feet are turning blue when you change positions, if you have fungus on your feet, a lot of these things indicate that you don't have enough oxygen getting into your body. We actually test people for tissue perfusion here. We test their fingers to see if they're getting enough oxygen in there. And this is not the 98% oxygen that you get when you go to the hospital. They go, oh, your oxygen's really good. It's got to get from your lungs. It's got to get into your fingers, your toes. Let me tell you, if you don't have enough oxygen in your fingers and your toes and your nose, and if you're cold all the time and you sleep with socks on and you got fungal infections on your toes because you're not getting enough oxygen in your toes for your immune system to work, it's going to be hard for you to get better because oxygen creates energy in your mitochondria. Mitochondria create homeostasis, and you need that for your supplements to work. You need that for your brain to work. Your brain takes 60% of the oxygen you take in. So we're going to talk a little bit about cigarettes and stuff like that, and cigarettes like drain like 100% of the oxygen that you do take in from your brain. Oxygen is critical. If you have sleep apnea, though, this is like the big bad oxygen killer. If you have everybody, and it's amazing. Until one of my colleagues told me about this, it was just like the light went off in my head. So I started interviewing my patients with sleep apnea. 70% of my patients said some variation of, well, someone told me at one time I might have sleep, but you know, I never really checked it. Well, who's that someone? Well, it was my husband, it was my wife. And they say I snore. And sometimes it seems like it was a husband and a wife, and she turned to her husband and said, I told you, you stopped breathing. I have to shake you to see if you're still alive. People, if your wife is doing that or your husband's doing it, you have sleep apnea. Or at the very least, you need to go get it checked. And if you have sleep apnea, it is hard to get a chronic better. So if we have a person that has sleep apnea, they are going to get checked. Or if they have signs of it, they're going to get checked. If we test their perfusion and it's like 1/10 of what it should be, they're going to get checked. But most of them said, oh yeah, I've been diagnosed with it. Are you wearing your CPAP? Well, it's a pain, it's this, it's that, it's all that type of thing. Okay, well, we're not gonna treat that. Why? Because not to be crass, but in this office, insurance won't cover me. Okay, so our people are paying out of the pocket, you know, their hard-earned dollars. I happen to think they deserve to get a response for them. Well, they're not getting a response if they're not getting oxygen anywhere in their system. So we will have people go and get checked. We will have people start using their sleep apnea. Just for the record, our observations seem to sync with what the research shows out of there. Only about 30% of people who have CPAP machines use them. I get it. I get that they're a pain in the butt. But let me just tell you, quick story. I had one gentleman in here not that long ago, came in here. He came here. We're in Reno. He came here from Idaho, drove all the way down here. He had He had dizziness. He had severe vertigo. It's severe balance problems and peripheral neuropathy. And he drank and to his admission, and he smoked. And he was a totally compliant patient. He would do anything we told him to do, except use a CPAP. So finally, he was getting better with what we were doing, but we hit a wall, and I said, you know, we may as well stop right now because I don't think he got on a CPAP because he was like, he's a Seuss. He was like, okay, he gets on a CPAP. Now he's back in Idaho. He calls me 3 days later and goes, Doc, I think we're done. I thought maybe he was mad at me because he wasn't going to be able to get on a CPAP. His dizziness was gone, his vertigo was gone, and his peripheral neuropathy was better. Now, I'm using an extreme example, okay? But I'm just telling you, I'm using that example to say, we had already done a lot of things to him. He had already improved a lot. His vertigo had improved, his balance had improved, but it was coming and going still. His peripheral neuropathy had improved maybe 40%. By the time he was done, it was gone because you started getting oxygen into the distal areas. Our big area is your brain. We need it to get into your brain. If your hands are cold and your feet are cold, you're not getting circulation. Oh, and you know, that could lead to things like Alzheimer's, like that. But in our world, we need oxygen for you to get better. And so does everybody else. You start thinking about some of the reasons that maybe you're trying all these things online and they're not working. This is what we're gonna be talking about all year. I mean, why can't you tell me how to get better? You're holding back on me. You're not telling me. Well, are you one of the people out there who's been diagnosed with sleep apnea and you're not using your CPAP machine? How do I know that? So I can't be giving you a line. So sleep apnea. Now, there's another thing called biotoxins. This is kind of an interesting area. This is Lyme disease. And if you want to see our take on Lyme disease, you can look. We have several presentations online about Lyme. This is brown recluse spider. This is mold, okay, like watery buildings and things like that. This is wisteria. Have you been eating seafood? Those are things that are kind of in the gray area. They do have an effect if you have those. They do need to be dealt with. I had one lady who had fibromyalgia, and we were doing everything with her, and she'd get better, and she didn't get better, and she'd get better, and she didn't get better. And then we found out that she was in an apartment where she was sleeping on the other side of the wall where she was sleeping with her head against that wall was a huge transformer, electrical transformer. And we thought, and so there's those of you, the electrical guys out there, and that there's a wide spectrum of you out there, okay? That's all of these things are important. I think in and of themselves, each one of them has been overplayed, and don't start throwing things at me, the Lyme patients out there, look at our Lyme presentation. But they all do need to be addressed because these will create chronic issues with you that are going to stop a lot of the things from getting better. Biotoxins, we call them, by and large tend to get better through certain protocols that can be done. But those protocols in and of themselves are a little bit more, like for that lady, it was move, and she moved. All of a sudden she got better. For people who have the mold, they got to get the mold taken out of their homes. And the vast majority of time, that'll do it without getting too heavy into things. The wisteria, stop eating seafood, and the Lyme, we have a whole presentation on that. So these are some of the obstacles to cure that are more physiologically based, okay? And those are the obstacles to cure that most people can really kind of grasp onto and go, okay, that makes sense, I'll do that. Well, I don't have a dentist in here and I don't have people who do certain things like relative to some of these other issues. So we send them out. An obstacle to cure could be if the person comes in here and they are in severe post-traumatic stress syndrome and they're getting ready to jump off the ledge. That is a little bit more than herbs, botanicals, and even functional neurology. We do functional neurology here, treatment, okay? And that, we use it primarily to get people's chronic stress responses under control and their post-traumatic stress syndrome under control. And if I had to put it on a scale of like 0 to 10, 0 to 8, we can probably handle, but once it starts gets to like 9 and 10, people have a bad day, they might wanna commit suicide. And we've had these people, so I don't think I'm just talking out of line here, or that this is theory. We've been doing this for a long, long time. And those people, we actually have other people, practitioners. We have functional psychiatrists that we work with. We have amazing clinical hypnotherapists that we work with. Some people don't want to do clinical some people don't want to do hypnotherapy, okay? I get that, that's fine. We have two other ladies that one does EMDR, which is a counseling with some neurological components, and another one who basically is a talker. And we'll use them while we're doing this. If people are in counseling when they come in here, like the two people that came in yesterday, who went through some horrendous trauma, that makes me feel better, because that's going to help. So this is another potential obstacle to cure. That person comes in here and they're that much, and I gotta get through this without a drug, or no, I'm not gonna go to a counselor, or I get it, if you don't believe in hypnotism, that's okay with me, it's okay. I think I'm very difficult to hypnotize from what I understand, because I tried it out. But I've seen miraculous results with so many of the people, and I'm sure the skill of your practitioners. But these are the things that we do in here every day. And these are things that we have to consider on everybody. These are complex cases. So these are the physiological abnormalities that could interfere with the ability of a functional medicine practitioner who's trying to get your physiology to work properly with lifestyle changes, with dietary changes, with getting rid of foods that you're allergic to, with hopefully targeted, appropriate interventions botanicals and neurotransmitters. So, you know, your physiology can only, you know, you have to have the physiology to be able to recruit it, to get it to respond. This is part of the sabotaging you online. So those are the big ones in that area. I do consultations with people to pull all of that out of them. We actually are gonna go over our history the next time. And don't miss that. It is not boring. Our history is 18 pages long, and I'm going to walk with you through a history. I'm going to grab a file here and walk through it and tell you how a person should walk through a history. I think it'll open your eyes. We'll talk about history taking, how it's become obsolete, why that's a disaster, why it's even more important with the patient population. Now, some of the other obstacles to cure that may not be as obvious to you. Again, if I have a person coming in here, my goal is to determine if this person has the types of conditions that we have helped consistently. And is it going to be worth it for them to come in here and do what we asked them to do? And we have signs all over the place. We didn't say it was going to be easy. We said it was going to be worth it. And so there are other things that I'm trying to tease out. Now, these are things that you may want to tease out on yourself as you're combing the internet and listening a million different opinions on heavy metals, or a million different opinions on Lyme, or a million different opinions on leaky gut. Does it exist? Can you? But these are more important than even you know, trying to figure that out. First thing is differing expectations. If a person comes in here and we have a sheet that we ask people, so what's your expectations? And if they go, my expectations are be perfect. My expectations are that I'm going to become a world-class skier, and that I'm going to shoot par golf, and that I'm going to write a book, and that I'm going to do that. Most people coming here are pretty ill. I'm not saying people can't go back to doing wonderful things again. Our goal is to stop the downward progress and reverse it to the degree that is humanly possible in that person. A lot of our people aren't going to be able to get perfect. If they say they're going to want to be cured, they're not going to be cured. If you're one of my patients, you've come here after you've tried everything. This is where I'm going to help you to evaluate the everything else that you're trying before you get here, because I think the estimates are that half the country is going to be diagnosed with chronic by the year 20. That's 160 million people. So we're trying to help you out. And so differing expectations. If a person comes in with those expectations, I might say, look, here's what I think we can do. Looking at your history, understanding by that time your exam findings, here's my realistic expectations. If theirs are different than mine, then, you know, I won't discourage them from not doing it if they're like, but it makes it hard. And I just have them, I literally have them sign something saying, I told you these are my expectations. Because what happens is most of our patients get better and then they go like, I wanted to be perfect. That's a problem, okay? Because I know there's a positive mental attitude group out there. I'm positive mental attitude, okay? But you have to understand realistic limits. Even functional medicine has its limits, okay? And you have to realize that. Non-supportive spouse. This is one of my favorite ones. I'm sitting here, I'm at my desk, and there's two chairs across from me, okay, behind these cameras. And my favorite consults by far are when the husband, because the husband usually doesn't want to be here. The wife's usually dragged them in. Not always, but 75-80% of the time at least. And I'm asking the husband questions, and he's going, no, and the wife's over there going, oh yeah, you do that. Oh yeah, you do that. So that's actually a good thing. That's a supportive spouse, believe it or not, even though it's usually the woman irritating her husband and occasionally vice versa. Those are fun. And I get the most data out of them because that spouse is actually, and they actually want that to get better. But I get the opposite. I'm over here and it's usually the woman is the patient. And usually I'm like, you know, we're walking through and I'm talking about your fibromyalgia and how there's a chronic stress maybe in your life, and maybe you're in post-traumatic syndrome, and maybe you've got an autoimmune problem, and maybe you have food sensitivities, maybe one of those food sensitivities is gluten. And then the guy pipes up, well, you know what, we drank three martinis a night, and we're Italian, and we're not going to quit our pasta and all that type of stuff. Like, and sometimes it's not that obvious. Sometimes the gentleman, and it's rarely the woman, sometimes it is, I'm not being sexist here, guy, but it's usually a guy. And if the guy's sitting there and he's like, give me one of those, I'll just look at him and say, even if he's a big guy, and I don't know if you can tell I'm a little guy, I'll say, you know, that's not a good sign. That actually will sabotage anything. Because if I'm trying to get that spouse, and again, this is a business. People are coming in here and paying for the service, you know. If I'm trying to get that spouse, and you got to cook. If I'm trying to get that spouse to eat a proper diet, I find out that the four worst foods in the world for her to eat are her husband's four most famous foods. He doesn't like alternative practitioners. He's still in the medical model, which I'm not against, okay? But you know what I'm saying here. That's a sign for disaster. That is an absolute sign. That's an obstacle to cure. Another obstacle to cure is, and I don't mean this to discourage any of you from coming in, okay, but an alcoholic who is drinking, they come in. Okay, not an alcoholic who has quit 6 months ago, a year ago, 30 years ago, or anything like that, okay? But here's been my experience. With maybe two exceptions, it's hard. This program, it's already hard to get better. And so now you're having to change your diet. Now you're having to change your lifestyle. Maybe you're having to go to sleep at an hour. Maybe I've asked you to go take a walk 20 minutes. And oh, by the way, you got to stop drinking. That's a tough one. Now, I don't have a problem when people have to stop smoking, okay? When people have to stop drinking, it's a big deal because drinking affects your cerebellum, affects your gut. It's an antiseptic. It screws up your intestines, it screws up your stomach, I think I already set up your blood sugar, it can ultimately cause pernicious anemia, it can cause certain types of peripheral neuropathy. Usually it's part of the problem when the person comes here. Inevitably, the person who begs me says, I'm gonna stop, inevitably they stop, and they go through two or three or four months worth of care, and they're wonderful, and life is good, and they're kicking up their heels, and they feel great, and their symptoms are going away, and then they do. So for those of you who are actively maybe over imbibing, it's better to take care of that first before you get on to this. And for those of you who are saying, why are you telling me this? I'm looking online. Well, guess what? If you're looking online and you're drinking excessively, okay, you're drinking more than four drinks a day, every day, then you're drinking too. Look, you can change your diet, but guess what? That alcohol is screwing up the inside of your intestine. So you got permanent leaky gut, you're trying to fake your gut, you're developing new food sensitivities to the new food you're eating, your supplements aren't getting broken down, they're not getting utilized. It's a big problem. And these are the things that I see. This is real practice, okay? This is the real, where the rubber meets the road practice. This is what comes in here. every day. It's kind of interesting. So non-supportive spouse, drinking, different expectations, present day unresolving stress. Now we already talked about, you know, if somebody's like a 0 to 8, we can probably handle it here. If it's like a 9 or a 10, we're probably going to recruit other people in. If you're resistant to including other people, that's a problem. But if you are in a present moment stress, and the stress is what I perceive is causing part of your problem or a lot of your problem after I do the interview, that's a difficult one. A good example is it's like two people are in a massive divorce. Financially, they can't get out of it. Maybe they're even still living in the same house, or they're in a legal battle, and they're talking to attorneys, and they're in that, their deposition. Nothing is going to calm that down, because that is an act of restimulation. And those folks, I will tell, to stop, let's not do this until that's resolved. So if you're like that and you're hoping that pills and supplements and the stuff you learn online, there can be some herbs and botanicals that you can get online that certainly can take the edge off of that. But that physiology, if you want to know, you look at one of our, you can look up powerhealthtalk.com. You can look at, I think we got one on like stress and autoimmune stress and chronic pain. In fact, I'm certain we have several of them. You can look at that and you can see why. This might be a reason that you're sabotaging it. I mean, you're out there, you want me to tell you how to get better. We have me talking about something like irritable bowel syndrome. You can go and look at that and see why you're not going to get better at what you do if you are at that moment. And there's a lot of other things. I saw this a lot during the recession. People were losing their homes. That was a cycle. That was a long cycle. People were losing their businesses. They were losing their houses. It was horrible, 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 horrible. And it was just like gut-wrenching. But there was nothing that we were going to be able to do for them until that stress was at least, until the cause of that stress was at least resolved. And then it comes down to a level where we can help the people come in with a model that conflicts with ours. So look, functional medicine, I don't know what you've been told, okay? But functional medicine is not about giving you an herb and botanical for whatever you have. It's not about just getting on the autoimmune paleo diet, okay? And it's about systems. I just had a great case. Oh my goodness. And this lady can't, Reno was kind of the alternative mecca of the universe back in the 70s, because we were the only place in the United States. I mean, we had divorce and we had prostitution and we had gambling. So why not have alternative medicine, right? So we had free reign here. People were coming here from all over for cancer treatments and Laetril and things. So we got a chance to really see a lot of the different models here, so we've been around at this for a long time, and we understand like what all the different models are. Functional medicine, those all of the models that developed at that point in time were kind of like, let's take the medical model and make it a template for the alternative model. And that was, okay, we're going to use this supplement for that, we're going to use this supplement for that, and that's not what this is about. That is for people from 100 years ago, which we're going to talk about. Autoimmunity has changed the game dramatically, drastically, and our society is massively stressful, and that has changed. Both of them, more autoimmunity has changed the game. But I have a lot of people who are still coming in with the old model. I've online, I come in, I've got 15 supplements, I'm already doing what you told me to do, you're going to use those supplements, I'm already doing it, why is this not going to work? We start off with that. And then if that person actually decides they want to do care, despite my warnings, having a alternative model is for me, this is now a for me thing, makes it challenging. And it may make it challenging for you if you're looking online and you're still using that model, but you have an autoimmune problem or you have a chronic problem that requires you to address system. I have a case right now that miraculously is continuing to improve. And when we just got all of her updated blood panels the other day, and she was in shock that her thyroid was better and her blood sugar was better and her inflammatory markers were down and all that. And I was in shock, but I wanted to say, you could have had this a longer time ago and we could have you much better than this now if every time I told you what to do, you didn't go online and then research it and then come back and then question me on it. And then because you didn't think that my model was correct, you went and took 8 other supplements in the meantime. And then that screwed up everything I was trying to do. And then we had to go back 3 weeks. So it's a frustration that I didn't used to have to deal with like years ago, because nobody just believed in what we did. They came in here desperately. They did what we asked them to do. And actually it was a lot easier back then. But now people are educated. one of the things we're going to talk about is people being educated maybe in the wrong things, but coming in with a different model or entering into an investigation, your research online without the background, the full background of understanding what you're getting into, and you not realizing that you need more of a background to understand what the new model should be going on out now. And I don't say this cavalierly. I came along this way. I mean, I used to do, here's your blood sugar diet, here's your muscle test, here's your supplement. I did that back in the 80s. And it worked for some people, okay? I get it. But this is a different world now. And so the model of functional medicine, you need to understand the chemistry of the brain. You need to understand the chemistry of the gut, how the gut chemistry affects the brain, how the brain chemistry affects the gut. You need to understand hormones. You need to understand hormonal chemistry. You need to understand why hormone replacement therapy should never be done before you've tried everything else. You need to understand that when you have a period that's off, it isn't about just going in there and getting estrogen therapy or shots of progesterone or horse or, you know, type of stuff like that. You need to understand that you need to look at your stress hormones first, your gut first, your liver first, your blood sugar first. And you need to understand, well, how do you understand that? You need to be an endocrinologist. You need to be a gastroenterologist, alternative. This is what functional medicine is supposed to be. Don't get mad at me out there, functional doctor. I'm just saying that. I'm always a little suspect of a functional medicine doctor who specifies, I treat diabetes only. You can't treat diabetes because diabetes, usually by the time a person comes in here, they've already tried so many things. So they've already, and that person comes in here, we just had one we released. When she came in, she was on metformin and Lantus, and she was on 2 insulin. She's off of that, okay? And she's lost her weight and she's happy. Her vertigo's on her balance. So that's the patient that shows up in here. And to do that, you need to understand there's bacteria in your gut that could be altering your blood sugar, that there are stress mechanisms that could be altering your blood sugar, that there are food sensitivities that could be altering your blood sugar. And who's taking that into consideration? Well, nobody, okay? Because that's the old model. That's the new model, but we're back on the old model. Okay, well, we have blood sugar, so let's take chromium picolinate. Well, that didn't work. Well, it didn't work because you didn't look at all these other things, because that's an old model, okay? And that's not what we're doing. That's medicine for people who are for a different population in a different time. So coming in with a model that conflicts with ours, me having to argue with people, me having to debate with people, it takes up valuable time. That person's already come in convinced that they know a lot of stuff, that and they're the expert in that stuff. But and they're very bright people, but unfortunately they're an expert in the wrong model of care. It's not working. That's why they're here. But apply that to you looking online too, and I think you'll find it's valuable. Patients being experts on the wrong mission. That's kind of what I just went through. Is people are experts on this supplement or that supplement. They want to come in here. They read one supplement and they start telling me about 5-HTP, and they start telling me about SAMe. I know this. This is what I do every day. We have supplements. We use them for a variety of different things. That person doesn't realize for some reason that hopefully your functional medicine doctor has taken several hundred hours to maybe a couple of thousand hours worth of background on it and should at least understand those extreme basic aspects of what's going on. But they probably understand it better than you do if they've actually done what they know, because they probably have looked into your drugs. They probably have looked into your other supplements. They've probably looked into your gut. There are certain people who have concussions who shouldn't be taking certain things. There's so many variables on that. And if the person is just so convinced that they, I get it from some people who are, I get it a lot from people who are in the field. Okay, I'm not gonna mention specific professions but when they're professional, when they're already professionals in the healthcare field, look, when I go to the dentist and I lay down in a dentist chair, I don't tell him anything. I have a great dentist. I refer people to him. When he tells me this is what I got, I do it. I have another colleague who we work with medically wise. When I go to him, I'm confident in him. I know what he does. I don't tell him what to do. And I know a lot about a lot of this stuff. But the point is I choose somebody that I have confidence in, and I do what they tell me to. And it seems to work out pretty. And I don't pretend that I know a lot about dentistry, other than you need to get infections gone so my patients. And I don't pretend I know a lot about the medical aspects. I know medicines from a perspective of this is causing problems here, this is interfering with thyroid function. But I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm not an osteopath. And so when I go to them and I count on their expertise for, okay. So what I'm saying is like, and it's just really, now more I'm thinking about it is more, almost more for other, our people who are very bright. We have a big university here. I treat a lot of the teachers from the people who are the head of the engineering department, the head of the physics department. And they kind of come in and they're pretty smart dudes and they've done their research. But usually they figure out part way through that it's better to just like let that person who knows what they're doing do what they do. So you may just want to apply that to, if you're looking online and your stuff's not working, it may be because you need to seek some help from somebody who has a little bit more wider grasp of the physiology of what's going on there today. You know, to add to that, I mean, let me go back to what I've alluded to a couple of, and this is reinforced in functional medicine courses all over the country. And there are a lot now. And that's something you should look into. If you're going to go to a functional medicine doc, make they are function that has some background. I mean, there's a lot of great courses, and they all teach a lot of the things that I'm talking about here. Let's see, to add to the previous, much of what's online. I lost my train of thought. So to go back to, a lot of what's online is for people who are patients 100, okay? So I've been in practice a long time. I've done a lot of different things, and I've been in musculoskeletal work. I've been in scoliosis work. I've been in traumatic work. I've testified. I've been a witness. I've done diets ever since the 1980s. I've done supplements. I've done all that type of stuff. And I've watched the patient population change just in the 40 years that I've been a practitioner. Okay, a lot of my older colleagues would say it's longer than that. We're not treating people who are relaxed anymore. We're not treating people who have the availability of the simple foods that we have. We're not treating people who have Saturday afternoon and Sunday off because all the stores are closed and you can't go and do anything anyway except maybe visit or relax and things. That's a big change. But the big change has been autoimmunity. Autoimmunity has changed autoimmunity can affect absolutely everything in your, it can affect, you know, it tends to affect your thyroid, it affects your gut, it can affect your nervous system. It can be part of the cause of certain peripheral neuropathies. It certainly can cause blood sugar problems. It can attack anything though. I mean, it can attack your stomach, and it can attack your left. Once autoimmunity is there, it changes the way you have to go after a case. And autoimmunity was basically what created functional. Okay, functional medicine came out of a need to start treating these chronic problems that nobody, these mystery diseases. You go into your doctor and you have, you know, 27 different symptoms, and those doctors take MRIs, CAT scans, they do all the tests, and the lab tests are normal. That was my colleague, my mentor, Dr. Crossi, and that came up with that phrase. Why do you still have thyroid problems when you're lab tested on Hashimoto's? And so that has changed everything. And so this is another obstacle to cure. When people don't realize that they have autoimmunity, or they have autoimmunity and they think they can look online, just find it simple. Here's the autoimmune protocol. Take this supplement, that supplement, this supplement, that supplement, that supplement. There are probably a small percentage of people that will work for if you take the right supplements for your particular case. But I think another obstacle to cure really is that patient needs to realize that things have changed. That patient really realize, and if I can't get that patient off of the old medical model, which is transferred into the new medical model of, you know, okay, they gave you a drug for it, I'm going to give you an herb for it, then that's usually an obstacle too. And the last one I'm going to go over is, it's just very simple. A lot of what's gotten us into where we are when we get sick has been basics. Okay, back to basics. And I'm a big fan of Chinese medicine. In fact, by the time I became aware of Chinese medicine, I'd already been a chiropractor for about 7 years. And I started studying it. And had I not been a chiropractor for that long, and had I known how to speak Chinese, I probably would have went to China and become one. Because I would say functional medicine is probably closest to classic Chinese medicine. And classic Chinese medicine is extremely, extremely comprehensive. It's not just acupuncture. And I did acupuncture for a while too. So basically, it's about basics. And in Chinese medicine, you know, first thing they do is they do a long history. Second thing they do is they do an exam, which is going to be the next couple of things that we go over. And I wouldn't miss that. I think it varies at how much you can get out of the exam and history, especially those of you who are being told all your lab tests are normal, there's nothing wrong with you. Okay. And then they go into diet. And then they change your diet. And then maybe they'll do a cleanse on you. And then at that point, maybe they'll talk about starting to do some herbs and oils, and they won't even think about doing acupuncture, most of them, until that's under control. That's kind of like a therapeutic order. And one of the important things is it's back to basics. You're going to have to change certain things. We've talked about how we're going to talk about oxygen and essential fatty acids and blood sugars as basics to you getting better. Well, for those to happen, you're going to have to stop smoking probably. Now, I don't exclude people because they smoke, but it's way better if they don't. If they stop smoking, that helps a lot for a variety of reasons that are extremely obvious. Decreases oxygen, though, to your brain, obviously creates a lot of toxins. We're trying to get toxins out of you. We talked about the drinking. We talked about people having to stop that. But, you know, one of the biggest ones is certain foods. I mean, the biggest problem people have with our very comprehensive, very sophisticated approach is the diet. Is getting off of the diet. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some people get off of gluten, they literally have withdrawal symptoms because some parts of the gluten protein actually sensitize neurons that are sensitive to morphine and narcotics and stuff like that. So you literally get a withdrawal symptom. Others, I mean, it's just there's certain foods that just stimulate the areas of your pleasure areas of your brain. There's other foods that force you you have what's called poor leptin responses to. In other words, you're always hungry. And people have to go through that for a little while. So probably one of the biggest things is people have to be willing to change. There is going to be a lifestyle change if you want to get better. There's talk about that online. There's talk about everything I've talked about online, except it's separate here, there, and the other thing. But the unwillingness to change, again, we have. So these are the obstacles to cure. And I think I have touched on the major, 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 major ones that I see probably 95% of the time. They're probably some that I have forgotten about. So this is important. You want to know how to get better. Now, there's going to be some nuggets in here that are going to help some of you. There's going to be some of you who are like, you know, throwing spitballs at your screen going, wow, this guy's like an idiot. But I'm telling you, these are the basics of how to get better. And if you bypass these, plus the ones we're going to be talking about over the next week or two, you are going to have a hard time getting better at all. And if you get better, you're going to be the person who has to keep doing it over and over and over again because there are things that are sabotaged. So that's obstacles to cure. And that's going to wrap up this week's presentation. And I'm here to educate you. We're here to try to answer the questions that we've had over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years or 8 years or whatever it's been. And so please do that. So until next week, I hope you...
This will conclude the episode. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave a comment and subscribe. Thank you.